evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Peace Talk. Peace Talk is a production of KTOO's Focus on Community, which is normally played on Monday nights. Peace Talk is produced by the local chapter of Veterans for Peace, and we normally have an eclectic program of everything ranging from interviews with people visiting our community to examinations of certain political movements toward peace and other related type of things. It's our way of impressing upon the community the imperative of peace. It's just about time to begin. I should tell you up front, so there's no secrets. My name is Phil Smith. I've been involved with Veterans for Peace here in Juneau for over 10 years. And we're assisted in the studio tonight by Martha Moore, who is another one of these magical people who knows which buttons to push and which sliders to slide. And we're very, very appreciative of that. Tonight, we have an interview that I actually conducted this morning with the assistance of Jeff Brown. We interviewed the writer and director of a Perseverance Theater production that's going up on June 30th. That's about 2 weeks from now. And the name of the show that they're doing is Warriors. It's never been done before. It's a brand new play. And it examines the experience of Alaska Native members of the military during two fraught times. The first one being during the Second World War, the invasion of Attu to remove the Japanese. And the second one being after the U.S. invasion of Iraq, a group of people in 2003 stationed right outside of Iraq, outside of Baghdad, that is, talking about their experiences, why they're there, and so forth. This is Warriors from a Native perspective. It leads us to an understanding of the people, the motives, the discussions, the conflicts, and finally, the peace that the characters find. I'm talking too much because there's another interviewee who is a young woman from Shaktulik up in the Nome area. And she is, her name is Mary Lou Rock. And she plays one of the characters, a entry-level soldier who finds herself right outside of Iraq in the army and interviews her, has dialogue with an older woman from another village and a more experienced person, and they talk about home and family and why they're there and things like that. So before I keep on giving too much away, I'm going to bow out here and play the interview that we recorded this very morning, this Monday morning, the 16th of June, with Dave Hunsaker and Mary Lou Rock. Well, this is Phil Smith, and I'm very delighted to have a couple of guests with us this evening. It seems as if the craziness never ends. The Sunnis are about to retake Baghdad, and the warmongers in the United States are still pushing the Obama administration to rewind the clock and restart the Iraq debacle. In light of that, and in light of various other developments around the world, none of which are particularly heartening, I think it's entirely appropriate that this evening we would discuss a piece of art. A piece of art that is developed locally will be presented by Perseverance Theater this summer, actually starting on June 30th, and will run all summer in repertory at the Perseverance Theater Summerfest 14 over the summer. It'll be running with Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, as well as the wonderful show, The Blue Bear. So we have some great art to look forward to. We also have art that'll make us think. And we learned that Dave Hunziker has written and directed a performance, a show, called Warriors. And Dave is with us this evening. Many of you probably know Dave, and I don't know him well enough to do a complete, detailed, on-air intro.
Thank goodness.
So you'll forgive me. With David is a young actor. Her name is Mary Lou Rock, and she is from Shaktulik. And she is a performer in this play that David has written. And we're just thrilled that she is performing, that she's an Alaskan, that she's here, and that she is spending this beautiful summer with us here in Juneau. So all of that said, I should be quiet and let you guys tell me and our audience, what is this show all about?
Well, thank you, Phil. This is Warriors is something that's grown out of my experiences with the Southeast Alaska Native Veteran Group and the experience of being many years in Alaska and a veteran, and hearing lots of stories about Alaska Native soldiers. At one time, we were certainly the highest per capita group. That is, they were the highest per capita group, Alaska Native soldier. One out of eight men either was active in the service or had been. So it was a pretty interesting statistic. And the more I talked to people, the more I started to think, this is an interesting thing we've got here. We've got the phenomenon of the very complex phenomenon of the reasons why Native people particularly might be drawn to the service, whether it's for patriotic reasons, whether it's for financial reasons, all of the above. But this play chooses to concentrate on two primary epics. One of them is World War II, and two of the characters are fictitious but based on real people, soldiers who were part of the elite Alaska Scouts group called Kastner's Cutthroats, who were very instrumental in mapping and retaking the Aleutian Islands that had been taken over by Japan. And so these are guys defending their land. And then the next part of the play, and I'll let Mary Lou talk about that a little bit, is set in 2003 in Iraq. Part of the occupying army there. And maybe could you talk about that part of the story a little bit?
Sure. Like I said, Mary Lou Rock, and in about culture, we just say my dad was Paula Siksik from Shaktulik, my mom, Marilyn Siksik, actually from Wisconsin. So hello to everyone, all my relatives out there. but yeah, I play a character, Polly Panawak. And my character is pretty green, and then E1, and then my comrade, Katie Ann Sam, is an E5. And it just, the thing that I really love about this play and about our characters is it's done in a way that is so, it's really beautiful and powerful. It doesn't really, I didn't know a lot about the history of Alaska and going to war and soldiers and things like that until I really talked to Dave. I mean, I've heard stories from people in my village, but mostly people don't, that I know, don't really want to talk about it. And so the character I play is based in the war in Afghanistan, and it's just kind of between these two characters that have different ideals and different ranks. And it's about really what's going on, why we're doing things. And my character, I feel, is kind of, she's kind of motherly and sweet. And it takes, it really takes a lot, I think, of courage and strength to be kind and sweet in the midst of war and in the midst of a lot of kind of terrible things that are going on. And so that's kind of what my character does, I think.
So you're playing a character who is an E1.
Yes.
That's your basic private in the Army.
Yes.
And are you playing a character who is a member of the Alaska Guard or a member of the regular United States Army?
Regular United States
Army. And you're in a paratrooper or a
We really haven't discussed it.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of MOSs, military occupational specialties, that, mm-hmm. that a bright, young, capable lady would be certainly eligible to pursue. Mm-hmm. But so you're, I mean, you're not a medic, you're not a cook, you're not a.
She's probably communications.
Yeah. Okay.
We get into one real life story over there that is kind of germane to this play, which is the death of Lori Piestewa, who is you probably remember
the American
as a
Indian,
Hopi,
yeah.
Supposedly the first, American mm-hmm. Native American killed soldier, female soldier killed in combat, and we make the play that depends on how you define a female soldier, going back to the Battle of Little Bighorn and so on. But Mary Lou does a wonderful job of playing this very sensitive and homesick young mother who's joined the military, and Katrina Hotch, who herself is a veteran, mm-hmm. plays Katie Ann Sam, who's a sergeant and a little more battle hardened and a little more, who has more answers, even though the answers. So the play asks the kinds of questions that I know that everybody in Veterans for Peace have grappled with before, during, or after serving, usually all of the above.
Yeah.
And it is a play, ultimately, and one of the reasons we wanted you guys to know about it specifically is it's a play very much about soldiers finding peace, mm-hmm. however that happens and whatever they've been through. There's a... Can I really put you on the spot and ask
do?
Sure.
Can you do a little bit of the play? Can you do the letter to Imugic?
Oh, sure. All of it?
Why not?
We got a better part of an hour here, and it's just fascinating. So
maybe I can set this up a little bit. While she's writing a letter to her little 2-year-old girl back in the fictitious village of Nunavut, we felt like when it came to villages, we probably not to get too specific,
right.
but, which is a Yupik village, kind of in the YK Delta, as we've imagined it. And so it's some kind of, this is in 2003, in outside of Baghdad, where things are pretty hot. And so there's some kind of, there's been a rocket attack, and she's in a bunker wearing full Kevlar armor and helmet and everything, and writing this letter to her daughter, which makes us all choke up every time in rehearsal. I don't know what we're going to be blubbering like babies back in the sound booth during the performance. But with that intro, please.
Okay, and this is, like I said, to my 2-year-old daughter, I call her Imugic. Dear Imugic, I'm hoping Daddy will read this to you, and if there are some parts you don't get just quite yet, maybe Daddy will put the letter away and save it, and you can read it for yourself someday when you're a little older. Right now it's real noisy over here, but I feel quiet in my heart when I think of being back home and holding on to you real tight when you go to sleep at night. I don't know who's making all this noise, them or us. Probably us. Seems like we're the ones with the most stuff, it seems to me, but I don't know. They don't tell us E1s too much. My friend Katie Ann Sam, she's an E5, and she always seems to know what's going on better than me. Someday I will tell you all about the great ancient Yupik warrior, Apanuchbak. They say he wore a magical armor made of mussel shells that an arrow or spear couldn't pierce. I've got something on like that right now, only it's made of Kevlar. It keeps Mommy safe, no matter what the bad guys try to do. The bad guys. You'd probably think Mommy looks real funny, like a turtle or a dinosaur, like she's trying to be a Panukpak. I sure miss you, little Imugic. And the Nurgaluk, and Daddy, and Grandma Junie, and Alaska. Alaska, so much. And you know what else I miss? The animals. The seals, and the muskox, and the bears, and the caribou. They've got animals here, but they're all tame and seem sort of sad. I don't know how to say it. Goats and chickens, but they're all dried out and starved and beaten. Kind of like the people here, The ones we're at war with? Or the ones we're saving? I used to think I knew which was which, but it's gotten real confusing over here. Maybe it's just because I'm an E1 and don't know nothing. Okay, baby, Mommy's got to go. Tell Daddy to stop reading this letter right now and give you a great big hug from me. The kind of hug the way you remember, with me all soft and cuddly in the calico kusbuk an Urhuluk made for me. Not sharp and hard like Upanuhbuk, the warrior. Not me as a soldier in armor in a far, far away place in the desert. I love you, Imujik. Read this again someday, especially if anything. Read it again. Love, Mommy.
Yeah. This is what we try to get through every night when she does. And it's what some, while she's doing that, there's some really beautiful little Inupiaq lullaby being sung in the background. Plus rockets going off and, you know, M4 fire. It's quite a symphony there. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you very much. That was lovely.
Thank you.
That will be public on June 30th, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't know what else to say. Where does this piece of theater, this exposure to reality through the arts, where does it go and where does it end up?
That's a really good question, and it does resolve. I mentioned Ed Littlefield, who's a Tlingit composer and musician from Sitka, now living in Seattle. Well, at the moment, he's actually in Sitka at the Fine Arts Camp over there. But he has created some wonderful music and woven in some traditional music. And so some of the piece tells the story of four ancient but real native warriors in Alaska. I'll tell you, one of them is... Mary Lou also tells the story of it, is a man named Giduk, who is a unfortunate and very tragic figure, who was an Aleut sea otter hunter in 1804, working for the Russians, and he was a sharpshooter. He was a crack shot with a musket. And as impossible as it seems, could shoot a sea otter through the eye from a kayak, not spoiling any of the fur. So it was incredibly in demand. The Russians conscripted him into their army when they went back in 1804 for the Second Battle of Sitka, and essentially drafted him to be a sniper, which made him a marked man, and eventually he was captured by the Tlingit and killed, put to death. So that's a story we tell. And the opposite story of him is his adversary in that battle is the famous Katliang, the great Kiksadi warrior. But then there are some others that we tell about too, and one of them is a woman whose name is not remembered, but who is from Cake, who was part of a raiding party that went all the way from Cake down to Whidbey Island, Washington, to get revenge for the death of a young chief that had happened in an unjust incident down there. And then the fourth one, which is we do as an Inupiaq dance, and that Mary Lou dances to, is Laura Belts Wright, who most people know as Laura Wright Parkes.
Uh-huh.
Pretty famous Parkes. But what's not as well known was that she was the best shot in the Alaska Guard during World War II. She volunteered, and she was never in any combat, but she had something like a 50-mile stretch of coast that she patrolled by dog team, watching out for Japanese submarines and Zeros all up along the Chukchi Sea. So we weave in these stories along with the story of two of Kastner's cutthroats who take a Japanese prisoner on Attu, and these two women who are at something called Camp War Eagle, which was a real place outside of Baghdad in 2003. And in the end, it's all about each of them in an individual way, kind of reviewing why they're there in the first place, what they've done, and ultimately it's about how they make peace out of that. It's less narrative, I'd say, wouldn't you say? It's not so much narrative is introspective, I guess. Would be.
Yeah, and one of the things that I love, especially being from a Native culture, is we're, you know, the way we learn traditionally is we tell stories. And this is, you know, something that I haven't seen done before, you know, Alaska Native warriors and soldiers like this. And so it's really, really a powerful way to tell stories for our culture, you know, everybody, Natives and non-Natives, but we're specifically a very storytelling culture. Mm-hmm. So this is a beautiful and wonderful way to do that.
Do you, this might sound sort of like a naive question, but does the play and the characters reach, they might reach individual peace, but do they take a position on war? I expect that a PF, a private from Shaktulik, would be, or this fictional village, would rather be home doing something else. But I mean, is the rightness or the wrongness of the engagement ever explored?
Oh yes.
It actually, it really is, mm-hmm. and it's done. And what I love is that it makes you think. It makes you think about those things and kind of what are your own personal beliefs. And there's so many things I learned about, because I just, growing up, and I don't know if it's being a middle child, I always wanted peace in my family. So it was hard for me to think about things like this. And this play has really just got me to ask, you know, what is war? When is it right? When is it wrong? Are there times when it's both or neither? You know, it's just very interesting. So I think that the play brings up a lot of those questions in just a beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. Does it supply any of the answers?
Everybody will have to decide that. The different characters take on very different points of view. There's a very heated argument, and it's another emotional high place in the play between the character that Mary Lou plays and the one that Katrina plays, where Mary Lou's character, Polly, is comparing the U.S. military in Iraq to the redcoat soldiers of the British in 1776, come over with their superior weapons and their matching uniforms, and the insurgents, which were just really starting to get serious around that time, with the American Minutemen, people who were shooting at them from behind, just sort of guerrilla fighting, which infuriates Sergeant Katie Ann Sam, who's kind of a lifer, who may be a career. So it's a very heated debate, and one that, you know, what happens is, I think, the thing that happens with all soldiers everywhere, which is that the real allegiance that's kind of that we see taking place between the two young guys in Attu in 1943 and the two women in Iraq in 2003. The final allegiance ends up being to one's brothers and sisters in arms, and the big causes are too big for somebody down in the foxhole, as it were, to be able to come to any conclusions, especially on the spot. Years later, mm-hmm. it's another matter. But yeah, we ask all those questions as hard as we can.
I think that's an incredible undertaking. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So let's talk a little bit outside of the loop here.
Sure.
So the show goes up on the 30th of June.
Right.
And it plays through August 6th.
August 6th, yeah.
Which it plays in repertory, not every week or not every night.
It's some kind of odd times, and we hope Juno people can find their way to see it. Sundays and Thursdays we're on at 6 p.m. Mondays and Fridays at 2 in the afternoon, and Saturday at 11 a.m. So those are... So it's rotating with the other plays you mentioned, Vanya, right. Sonia, Masha, and Spike, and the Blue Bear. So all three of them are playing throughout that. It's about a five-week period, I think.
Right, and they'll be. This is not going to be at Perseverance?
It's going to be at the Jack.
At the Jack,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is, as we speak, being transformed into a space that we haven't seen in that place
cool.
before. Yeah. Yeah.
I've got to do something with that.
Well, we seem to be doing everything with it. It's become quite the place.
It's going to become the theater location, I guess, in Juneau. That's with the addition of a new theater and the rehabilitation of the old space. And Yeah, there's honor, I guess, in age.
I hope so.
Well, Juneau is an amazing place for the arts because if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden, what used to be an armory is a vibrant center for the arts in Juneau. And
you know, Phil, until you said that, it hadn't occurred to me that we're performing in what had been Juneau's armory.
Oh, really?
I hadn't put that together with our particular play.
And it had some other unfortunate uses, too, in the history of Juneau.
Yeah.
Just as a quick footnote here, and so that Mary Lou is up to speed. In 1971, I believe it was, an Alaska Airlines jet went up on the end of the Chilkat Mountains over on the way into Juneau, and it hit the mountain. And the performing arts space that you'll be using was used as the morgue.
Oh, really?
So, and it has an interesting history. It has all the Tlingit art on the walls, and I don't know what ultimately is going to happen with those.
Oh, they're staying. They're beloved, and for this reason, there were some the commander of the local guard mm-hmm. at the time. Because of that tragedy, felt like it was so terrible that the place would be sort of tainted in the minds of Juneau people. And there happened to be a couple of Tlingit artists who were in the guard at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, you people have ways of dealing with things like grief and tragedy."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "What?" He just gave him a little budget and said, "See what you can do about making this place whole again." And so they painted the clan mm-hmm. crests of everybody that they knew who lived here, who was Tlingit, as a way, as a memorial, and as a remembrance. And so in all the talk of remodeling the Jack and doing different things to it, nobody's ever seriously considered removing those things, which is pretty wonderful.
Wow.
I did want to say while we're here, one thing we do want to do is extend an invitation to veterans to come see this as our guests. We'd like certainly members of Veterans for Peace, but in Southeast Alaska Native Veterans, we said that. But anybody who hears this and would like to come, mm-hmm. just, you know, I mean, obviously a donation would be appreciated, but we do want to dedicate these performances to the veterans. And
well, that's very generous of you. And this is a Perseverance Theater production, right?
Or is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Just so I don't know who's the granddaddy here.
This is Perseverance.
Well, I sort of diverted my own self into this discussion of the facility. And so what I was going to ask is, what are the plans, if any, for post-August 6th? Will this be toured?
About that. We'd very, very, very much like to figure out how to raise the money to take it to AFN,
mm-hmm.
Which is happening in Anchorage in October. I
believe. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're starting to talk to some of those folks. And, you know, that's not a sure thing by any means. It's something we would like. It will be fine and wonderful if visitors to Alaska find their way to see this. You know, that would be fine. But we're not doing this for visitors to Alaska so much. This is really something that we want to do for Alaskans and particularly Alaska Native people. We'd love for them to come see it. So we're trying to figure out ways to do that as much as possible. It's a small enough show. There are only five people in the cast,
mm-hmm.
But it's not out of the question that it could tour.
Is it a full-length show? Is it hour and a half, three acts?
It's about an hour and 45 minutes. We do it without an intermission just because we feel like it is has a little bit more impact that way and doesn't seem to really need one. People that have watched it, mm-hmm. there's a lot going on, so hopefully people won't get bored. I don't think they'll get bored.
No.
They may not agree with everything they hear, but they won't. There's a little bit of strong language in it, as anybody who's been in the military may have encountered.
I think some of us who have been in the military would like to take credit for inventing some of this strong language.
A certain word used as a noun, verb, adverb, and adjective that we can all think of, probably.
Yeah. So does a show go into, it sort of ends up with the warriors finding peace and stability, and they're okay then with themselves. Does it just explore in any way the post-traumatic stress syndrome that many warriors are subjected to, or the tribal healing ways that have been developed in particularly the Native American communities to sort of reconnect people to their culture and their people when they come back?
I think we've got a sequel.
It hints at it to come.
Mm-hmm. There's a very haunted character, Ignaty Shelikov, who's the young Aleut guy who's getting his first taste of war and the first taste of killing somebody in this. And it's played very beautifully by Corey Joseph from Quiggillenhuck. And he makes us cry too. But there's a speech he has at the end where he's talking about, because he's part of the Kastner's Cutthroats, who were allowed to use their own weapons. There were a lot of them, subsistence hunters and fishermen and various kinds of trappers and outdoorsmen. And he didn't like the M1, as a lot of the guys in the scouts didn't like the M1. So he's using a 30-30 rifle that his old dad gave him, which had been a seal hunting rifle. And he recalls an old legend, which is actually a Yupik legend, about a time when there was war among Yupik people, way pre-contact times, and the things that the shamans and the spiritual people at the time warned them against is that these are weapons that are consecrated to hunting and to survival, and these are for the animals, and to use them to turn them against human beings is going to throw the world out of balance. And so he plays I think we're haunted by his last speech. We know things are never going to be the same for him. But no, the idea of getting into Native ways of healing PTSD and other things like that is a very good idea, and one we don't get that far. We leave all four of our characters still in combat.
Oh, okay. Well, the idea of a PTSD follow-up is sort of re-entry.
Yeah,
that's a great
play.
Idea.
It's a very poignant question facing a U.S. policy as well as individual families and villages. I know at YKHC up in, the Bethel area, they had a sort of a regional healing event that YK developed, and it was bringing the warriors back. It was welcoming them back. It was honoring them for their service. If not specifically for what they did, it was, as I understand it, I wasn't there and I just read about it or heard about it. It was an incredibly moving ceremony and contributed to, I don't know if this is empirical data or if it is just anecdotal, but it contributed to fewer incidents than one would have expected of people coming back to villages from Iraq, and reinserting themselves into it and being welcomed and honored for their service. It is sort of a story that we at Veterans for Peace have been working around the edges of PTSD, and we want to do a program of some type on it, not just a radio, a service program, or maybe just a couple of days talking about it. But it's an interesting approach. A lot of people have worked on this, and it used to be called Soldier's Heart during the American Civil War. People would come back and their lives were shattered and they couldn't connect and they didn't know what it was. And so now it has this sort of militaristic sounding name, but back then it was called Soldier's Heart. And anyway, I didn't mean to completely divert this, but it is a part of the military experience that many, many people do experience. And I think I shared a poem with David.
Powerful.
That a very, very good friend of mine who was a Yupik lad from Bethel wrote upon his return from Vietnam. And the poem goes into the feelings that he has being, during Vietnam, he was in the Mekong Delta, fighting those terrible guerrilla battles down there. And in his poem, he relates that experience to being on a skiff back on the Kuskokwim and coming up to the fish camps and people in the grass. And it's just, to me, an exceptionally powerful piece. And actually, there's a wonderful song that was written about it by the local...
Oh, but was it Buddy?
Yeah,
Buddy.
Yeah, Buddy wrote it, and it's just beautiful. Anyway, so that's a complete diversion from what we were talking about, except in a way.
It actually touches on something that I ran into in the research, which was a lot of the guys who, you know, Native soldiers from Alaska who were in Vietnam had this kind of extraordinary experience of, even though they're in a tropical or semi-tropical country, that it reminded them, and the people reminded them, of the places they'd come from. This is something that we get into in the play to another scene that Mary Lou has, but they're talking about this phenomenon of how difficult it was to aim a gun at people who looked so much like they did, and recognizing in the little villages that they were finding in the, you know, in the central highlands and places like that, that reminded them so much of subsistence villages back home. Not the terrain or the weather, but the people themselves and their lifestyles, trying to eke out a little living off the land. And this, they found they were part of this extraordinary large occupying army, but going fighting against people who reminded them of themselves.
And I think that that's one of the most helpful things, is because in talking to my friends who have gone to war, and one of my friends who is, you know, there's a lot of training, you know, beforehand to help you go. There's not a lot of support, I guess, that I've found to help you come back.
Yeah.
And I think, as, you know, especially being Alaska Native, growing up, one of the values that I was taught, never directly, but is that you don't make trouble. And part of that is we don't talk about it. And I think that, like I said, a play like this helps us to talk about it, because there are a lot of, you know, stories that I've heard about veterans, you know, who can't eat certain foods, or they wake up, you know, at night with all these dreams still. And it really warms my heart to know that there are, you know, efforts being made to heal that, because there is a lot of healing that needs to be done. And so I really think, you know, things like this are very needed. And it just makes my heart happy to know they're being thought about.
Well, they're being thought about, but we're a long way from dealing. I mean, look at the situation in the Veterans Administration now. I mean, we were willing to start a war. We weren't willing to pay for it. We were willing to create at least 300,000 casualties who needed VA assistance when they came home, and we weren't willing, you know, to recognize that fact and dig deep. And so now we have the backlogs and the scandals and so forth, even though, you know, funding did increase and the capability of helping increase, but nowhere near to the level of the demands. And you know, I guess we'll slog away and try to hack at that problem, but there's a lot more that needs to be done and should be done, and we need to destigmatize it too. And it's very difficult. A lot of us, people in Veterans for Peace, consider ourselves to be very pro-vet. I mean, we're very concerned about our fellow Americans, even if they were in there gung-ho, you know, shooting at Iraqi people and participating in some of that barbaric behavior that we as a country have sponsored. And yet, it's difficult to sort of reconcile the need to create support and to honor service, even though we look at it as a disaster for our country. Mm-hmm. And that's taking it, what you guys are doing, into a much larger context, which I know you can't totally explore, but I'm just I'm just thrilled that you're doing this.
Yeah.
So what about the Atka part? I mean, we all know a little bit about it, but when in 1943, the Japanese invaded the Aleutians.
Right,
and in 1944, they bombed Dutch Harbor, and we sent a bunch of guys out there.
But yeah, we sent a huge force to try to take back the islands of Attu and Kiska. And the Battle of Attu, which is a lot of people have completely forgotten that there was ever fighting on American soil in World War II, but it was per capita, per the numbers of people who were involved in it, was one of the bloodiest battles in the Pacific, the entire Pacific theater. We have the statistics someplace in the play. It's 600 Americans died, I think, on Attu. Is that what?
I don't remember.
600
exactly.
Americans, but 3,000 died. The Japanese died almost 3,000, which was virtually their entire force. They, when things were going badly for them, they made a big bonsai charge. Most of them lost their lives in that, and those who didn't committed suicide. There were about a couple hundred of the wounded and the people who were with them all killed themselves, and so it was an incredible loss for Japan, a big, huge tragedy. It was a big, bloody, bloody battle for the Alaskan forces, the American forces that were out there. Kiska, it was expected that there would be an even bigger battle there because there was a bigger occupying force, but the nature of the war in the Aleutians was such that weather itself was like a third adversary.
Right.
There were actually more American casualties as a result of weather than frostbite and the elements than actual warfare. Of course, that's all part of it. But Kiska, the Japanese troops there, managed to get off in a couple days of fog. So they came and found the island strangely abandoned.
Right.
So, I remember their movie came out at one point, you know, some kind of paranoid war movie, and said, no time in the history of the United States, in living history, has the United States been invaded by an enemy force. It's like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
It has.
I remember that. I was a little kid, lived in King Salmon when, during the Cold War, after the World War, and we used to shut down the whole plants there periodically because of jets scrambling and the need to go dark. And
white owl sites up all over the place out there. Yeah, on the Aleutians, there's still old white owl sites out there on the tops of volcanoes.
And it's so beautiful out there.
Yeah.
You know, God, it's beautiful. Gorgeous country. Anyway, okay, well, look, this has been a real privilege for me. I really appreciate you guys coming by. I'm looking forward very, very much to your opening night on June 30th, and we'll help get the word out.
Thank you.
This is a great opportunity for us to see some wonderful talent as well as an exploration of some incredibly important issues that we should all be paying attention to a little bit more. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we have a final thing they'd like to say? Mary Lou?
Well, I just wanted to just say how thankful I am to be a part of this. I've just been in a lot of very meaningful plays in the last few years, and this is just one of the most meaningful. I was trying to think, if you could have one word to describe this play. I was thinking beautiful, powerful, and the word that I actually, for me, came up with was needed. I think it's needed. It's needed to be seen. The stories need to be told. People... just need to come and see it. It's very, like all those things, powerful and beautiful. So.
Well, we will do our best to get people to come to see it. David, any final thoughts?
No, just we appreciate being here and appreciate being part of the veteran community. And this is our way of trying to give something back.
Well, it's much appreciated, and I'd like you for giving something back today. And we'll air this and hope that people listen carefully and hope that they come and wish you the best of luck as your show opens in a couple of weeks, week and a half, and we'll be there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So that was the interview that we held this morning. The guests were Dave Hunsaker, the author and the director of this show called Warriors. The other guest was Mary Lou Rock from the village of Shaktulik up in the Norton Sound area. They both brought a wealth of experience and obviously talent to this project. Once again, the show opens on June 30th in The Jack. It runs basically throughout all of July with two other shows. And the schedules, I forget off the top of my head, they're not your usual times. They're like Thursday and Friday at 6 p.m., Saturdays at 11 a.m., and two other, and then Sunday and Monday at 2 p.m. So you get down there, you'll see the other shows as well, but this is one we're very, 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 very much looking forward to. Let's take a break right now. My name is Phil Smith. You are listening to Peace Talk on Focus on Community on K2OO FM in Juneau.
Sail proudly presents the 30th annual Only Fools Run at Midnight, Saturday, June 21st, 11:59 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Get ready to take to the streets for Southeast Alaska's wildest 5K. Prizes galore for best centipedes, wackiest costumes, and top finishers. All proceeds help Sail inspire personal independence for people with disabilities, seniors, and elders. Join Sail on the solstice for Only Fools Run at Midnight. More details and registration at sailinc.org. Support comes from Canyon Hydro, with custom hydro system designs, complete water-to-wire packages, and repair and replacement services for public and private hydro systems. Serving small communities since 1976. More information available at canyonhydro.com.
And while we're doing these little public service announcements, I'm sitting here this evening, and right in front of me is a small poster celebrating the fact that this, beginning today, is Pride Week here in Juneau. There's a kickoff kickball at Cope Park that happened this evening. Wednesday on the 18th, day after tomorrow, there's gay karaoke at Rendezvous 21. On Thursday, there's an outdoor hike and bonfire. And on Friday the 20th, Pride Prom at the Rockwell Ballroom. And on the 21st, which is the summer solstice, there is the Pride Picnic over at Sandy Beach. And also that night, a bar crawl and a big gay dance party at the Triangle and end at the Rendezvous dance party. And Sunday the 22nd, a Pride brunch. And at 6:45, music on the fly out at the airport. There's also three films, which will be, I believe, at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. $9 per film or $20 for all. The Small Town Gay Bar is one of the movies. That's tonight at 7:30. Tuesday, tomorrow night, is 7:30, But I'm a Cheerleader is the name of that movie. And on Wednesday, the 18th, the movie Paris is Burning. So there are lots of things to do, lots of opportunities to engage in Pride Week here in Juneau. I think that the whole thing concludes with the Pride Chorus and a more public activity. I'm looking at this thing and I'll see it right off the top of my head. But pay a little attention, and you too can participate in these Pride Week activities. So, that brings us nearer to the end of the show. I wanted to play the song that we talked about during the interview. Buddy Tabor, our late great composer and singer from Juneau, wrote a song about a young Alaska Native veteran who is the author of that poem that we talked about during the interview. And he also happened to be a friend of mine in a couple of capacities. And I would like to play the song that, that Buddy wrote, and it's really all about post-traumatic stress syndrome and the way it affected this young person. So let's play that now.
There were no answers. There was no way out. At least that's the way it seemed way back then. He was just another soldier on another tour of duty. And when he came back home, the machine gun fire rattled off the walls of the skull at night. And inside the bars and through the doors of countless liquor stores, his world soon became self-medicated. He began to think that his brain was a frog being fattened for a giant snake to swallow. Yeah, he had his demons, and he fought them daily. They'd usually win a unanimous decision as they'd kick his ass across the cold, dark Arctic night. Come now, my healing, cleanse my soul. Grace divine, where the waters run cold. Clear and clean, my fiery tongue. The battle is over and the war is done. When he was sober, he suffered through the days hungover. Friends came by, but he quit answering the door, and this young soldier sank deeper and deeper. Nothing worked, everything was broken, things just got worse. He had a neighbor that liked to try to intimidate and bully him, and one day he just snapped. Grabbed his rifle, opened fire, the neighbor ran for cover and called the police. The police came, a gun battle started, and he wounded an officer in the face. And at that point, stuck the rifle in his mouth and put a bullet through his brain. Come now, my healing, cleanse my soul. Grace divine, where the waters run cold. Clear and clean, touch my fiery tongue. The battle is over. Miraculously, he survived 3 operations and 8 years in prison. It's been a total of 10 years since he's been his mind with chemicals. Maybe a man's rage eases with time and age. And with a gentle smile, the years slide by, and old nightmares don't seem real anymore. Likes to quote the great Mark Twain. When we realize we are all mad, the mysteries disappear and life stands explained. Yeah, there were no answers. There was no way out. At least that's the way it seemed way back then.
And there you have A Soldier's Story by the late, great Buddy Tabor. We're coming to the end of our show now. I wanted to mention the fact that the 4th of July is nigh upon us. The Veterans for Peace will have a float in the parade, and everybody is invited to come walk with us. The theme this year is I Love a Parade, and we scratched our collective heads and came up with the idea of the quote from Isaiah that we will beat our swords into plowshares, and we will have a float based on that theme, and you're more than welcome to join with us on the morning of July 4th. So we have about time for one more song, and I'd like to once again play a Buddy Tabor song. This is a song called Natalie Holloway. Maybe you remember about 7-8 years ago, the whole country was a twitter over the fate of Ms. Holloway, who was in Aruba and disappeared. And the result of all of that was enormous speculation. Meanwhile, in the real world, there was bombings and death and Iraq blowing up all around us. And that seemed to be pretty much ignored by the press. So here's Buddy's take on it from about, I believe, 2006. It's called Natalie Holloway. Am I on? Okay, thanks. We're not sure exactly what happened to Natalie, but we're just about out of time anyway. Martha's going to poke at it. No, I guess not. So we will conclude the program here by thanking you all for your time and your attention, and particularly thanking Mary Lou, Rock, and David for their time this evening and for putting up with us. Meanwhile, I think we're just about at the end of the program. One final thanks to Martha Moore, who has so ably assisted us with the technical aspects of the program. And once again, this is Phil Smith on behalf of Veterans for Peace, urging you all to wage peace.
We couldn't find you in Aruba with all the tears that we wept, but it kept our minds away from the war and $1 trillion debt. You were just a lonely high school girl about to spread her wings. When the facts ain't fair and balanced, the truth don't mean a thing. The day you came up missing, they sent the crews without delay, but they never mentioned Abramoff or the fall of Tom DeLay, or how Jack went to the White House over 200 times, and all the bribes and money that went down is bound to boggle up your mind. When the news is turned and you speak like in 1984, when you wake up in this nightmare with George Orwell at your door, when the facts are all distorted and the truth becomes a lie, and the tears fall down like napalm from freedom's bloodshot eyes. Dearest darling Natalie Holloway, I wonder if you have seen all those flag-draped soldiers' coffin coming from that nightmare dream, or the tears falling down on a mother's distressed face, or the hole in her heart from the sun she can't replace. I wonder if your parents mind that your tragic death was used to cover up the truth and never broadcast the real news. Stick the lies into your face that's bound to blind both of your eyes. While over in the war zone, 50,000.
The end of war. The end of war. The end of war. The end of war.
And that brings us to the end of our program. The end of war is still a little bit distant, but we'll keep working for it. Have a good evening. Thank you very much.